All right, so you're digging into law, right, and thinking maybe about veterans law, and wow, it hits you fast. Administrative law. It can be a lot.
It's a whole world, yeah.
It is, and you start to see just how tough it can be, especially for veterans who are trying to navigate the VA system. They're going through that whole benefits claims process, and they don't have a lawyer, you know?
Right. And that's where a case like Ingram v. Nicholson, that really becomes a landmark case to wrap your head around.
Huge, absolutely huge. And you know, that's exactly why we're doing this deep dive, you know, especially for all of you out there who are going to be the future legal eagles, whether you're going to be a veterans lawyer or just trying to figure out how these agencies, you know, the VA work with people, just regular folks. So Ingram really lays it out. It shows us what the VA has to do and what a veteran's rights are right from the get-go when they file that first claim. So ready to jump in.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay, cool. So first things first, what was the big legal question in this case? Like, what were they trying to decide?
So at the heart of it, Ingram asks, does the VA, do they have to do more than just read the legal jargon? You know, when a veteran files a claim and they don't have a lawyer, do they have to like read between the lines, try to figure out what they're really trying to say, even if the veteran doesn't know all the legal terms or the right laws to cite? I mean, should the VA be more understanding, you know, not so strict?
Yeah, that makes sense. So to get a real sense of how this works, let's break down this case. You know, like, who was Robert Ingram and what was going on with his claim?
All right, so Robert Ingram, he was a Marine Corps vet. Back in 1985, he had a pretty major surgery at a VA hospital. They had to remove one of his lungs.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's a big deal. And, you know, a surgery like that's going to have some serious lasting effects, right? So how did this lead him to filing for benefits with the VA?
Well, about a year later, so 1986, he filed his first application. And in that application, he makes it very clear that he had a lung removed and that it was done at the VA hospital. And he goes on to explain that because of this surgery, he can't do his job anymore. He was a carpenter, and you know, that was his livelihood, his skilled trade. But here's the thing, the important part. He lays all this out, the VA treatment, the disability, everything. But he doesn't specifically mention the law, the statute. 38 USC section 1151.
Right, which is that's the law that covers disabilities that happen because of VA medical care, right?
Every day.
So he's giving them all the important info, right, about the VA being involved and how it affected him, but he just didn't use that specific legal reference. So what did the VA do? What was their first response?
Well, they ended up denying his claim. It was a non-service connected pension claim, and they denied it in 1986. But here's the catch, and this is a big one. They never addressed the possibility of a claim under that 1151, even though what he told them seemed like it could fit, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, a disability that comes from treatment by the VA.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like a pretty big oversight. It really makes you wonder if they should have picked up on that, right?
Right.
Based on what he told them. So, what did Mr. Ingram do? Did he just give up on getting benefits?
No, not at all. Several years later, in 1992, he files another claim. But this time, he specifically mentioned that statute, the 38 USC section 1151. And in this filing, he says, you know, that there was negligence involved in that lung removal surgery back at the VA.
Okay, so he's getting more specific this time. He's zeroing in on that particular law and that idea of negligence. What happened with this claim?
So this time around, the VA finally grants him benefits under that section 1151. It took a while. They granted it in 1999, but they said, okay, your benefits are effective from 1992. So the date of that second filing.
Okay, so he gets the benefits related to the surgery, but not all the way back to his first filing. So what was Ingram's argument? Why did he think the benefits should have started sooner?
His argument was that those original filings back in 1986, the ones where he described the surgery and how it stopped him from working, those should have been enough to trigger a possible claim under Section 1151 right from the start. You know, he's saying the VA should have seen that possibility, even if he didn't use all the legal terms back then, which means his benefit should have gone back further than just 1992.
Makes sense. So what did the Board of Veterans' Appeals think about that argument? Did they agree with him?
Well, no. The board took the side of the VA. They said, look, Mr. Ingram, you didn't do it right in 1986. You didn't cite the law. You didn't say the word negligence. So you didn't properly make a Section 1151 claim.
Okay, so that sets the stage for the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, the CAVC, to step in. What did they have to say about the board's decision? What was their reasoning?
Well, the CAVC actually overturned the board's decision. And they put a lot of emphasis on this idea of a sympathetic reading. They said that the VA has a duty to read filings from veterans who don't have a lawyer, these pro se claimants, with a sympathetic reading. And that's really the heart of the case.
So sympathetic reading, that's a key term. Can you unpack that a bit? Like, what does that actually look like when the VA is looking at a veteran's claim?
It means basically that the VA can't hold veterans to the same standard as a lawyer.
Right.
You know, they can't expect these veterans to know all the legal lingo or to cite specific statutes to make their claim valid. The court said, focus on what the veteran's actually saying. What are their symptoms? What disabilities are they dealing with? And what are they saying caused these problems? Even if they're not using fancy legal terms.
Okay, so the VA needs to look beyond just the legalese and really try to grasp the situation. Try to figure out what claims the veteran might have based on what they're saying, even in their own words.
Exactly. And the court even went on to say that the board was wrong to expect Ingram to use all that legal language in his first filing, you know, to say he wanted benefits under Section 1151 specifically. The court said that's just not fair to veterans who aren't lawyers. What the VA needs to do is take the information the veteran gave them and figure out if it reasonably suggests a possible claim under the law.
And this brings up another interesting point, right? About those claims that maybe don't get a clear yes or no from the VA. What did the court say about that in Ingram's case?
That's a big part of this decision. The board had argued that because they denied Ingram's pension claim in 1986, and they didn't specifically say anything about Section 1151, well, that meant the Section 1151 claim was automatically denied, you know, impliedly. But the CAVC, they rejected that. They said, you can't use that implied denial idea here. They even said it was different from another case, Dish Hotel, which also dealt with this kind of situation.
So they drew a line between this case and that earlier precedent. Why did they make that distinction?
They said that using this implied denial logic in a situation where the VA didn't even really address a possible claim, that could be really unfair to veterans. Like, how can you expect a veteran to appeal a decision on a claim if they don't even know it was denied? The court's point was, if the VA doesn't clearly say no to a specific claim, then that claim is still pending, it's still alive, and the veteran can come back to it later. That's a big deal for veterans, about basic fairness, you know, due process in the VA system.
Right, you can't appeal something if you don't know there's anything to appeal. So back to that idea of a sympathetic reading, right? It's clearly a key part of the Enneagram decision. But how should the VA actually apply that standard? Are there any specific rules they have to follow?
The court didn't lay out a strict step-by-step process, but they were pretty clear about the main idea. The VA has to look at the veteran's filings the way a regular person would, not like a lawyer looking for specific legal terms. The big question the VA needs to ask is, do these documents read as a whole, without needing legal jargon? Do they suggest a possible claim for benefits under Title 38?
And how did they apply that to Ingram's case, to that 1986 filing?
Well, they look at what Ingram said in 1986. He said his lung surgery at the VA left him unable to work as a carpenter. Now, he didn't use words like negligence or mention the Section 1151, but the court said if you read that statement with a sympathetic reading, you can see that he might have a claim for disability caused by VA medical care. And remember, the VA knew he had the surgery at their hospital, and they knew it was affecting his ability to earn a living. So the court basically said, it's the VA's job to put those pieces together based on the information he gave them.
So this ruling, it's not just about Mr. Ingram, right? It has big implications for how the VA handles all PERSI claims going forward. What are some of the key takeaways for law students who might be interested in this area of veterans law?
There are a few really important points to remember here. First, it shows how important it is to protect veterans who are representing themselves. You know, the VA can't expect them to be legal experts. They can't say, oh, you didn't use the right legal word, so your claim's no good. They have to look at the information itself, the substance of what the veteran's saying.
Yeah, that seems crucial for making sure everyone has a fair shot at getting benefits. What else should law students take away from the Enneagram case?
Well, another important takeaway is about this thing called the pending claims doctrine. And the court, they really clarified how that works, especially compared to that Dish Hotel case we talked about. The big thing to remember is, if the VA doesn't specifically say yes or no to a claim, then that claim's still active, it's still out there. And that can make a big difference for when a veteran starts getting benefits, the effective date. Like in Mr. Ingram's case, the court said the VA missed a potential claim in his earlier filings, so he might be eligible for benefits going back further.
Which could mean a lot more money in the veteran's pocket, right? Depending on how far back those benefits go.
Exactly. And finally, for those studying law, this case really shows how administrative law and equity intersect. It's a great example of how the courts step in to make sure things are fair for everyone, especially when you're dealing with government agencies. You know, it's a balancing act between following the rules and making sure individuals are getting loft in the system. And it also shows how the VA is supposed to work. It's meant to be a system that helps veterans, not one that fights against them.
So just to recap the big points from Ingram v. Nicholson for our listeners, the VA has to read claims from veterans without lawyers in a way that tries to understand them. It's not about legal jargon, it's about the substance of what they're saying about their conditions and what caused them. And if the VA doesn't specifically deny a claim, it's still pending, and that could change when the benefits start.
That's a great summary. And it really highlights that in veterans law, it's all about making sure the VA keeps its promise to those who served our country, even if they don't have a law degree.
You know, when you think about Enneagram and this whole sympathetic reading standard, it makes you wonder about other government agencies, right? What about all the other people who have to deal with these complicated bureaucratic systems and they don't have lawyers or the know-how? How do we make sure these systems are fair and accessible to everyone, regardless of their legal knowledge? It's something to think about, for sure, especially as we consider how the law and public service can strive for greater equity and accessibility in all areas.